Hi, friends. Welcome to Interviews, Voices of Our Herbal Elders. This is my opportunity to talk to some of my dearest friends, people who have not only influenced my herbal work, but also have had a major influence on the revitalization of American herbalism. Most of us began our herbal work around the same time, in the early 1970s and 80s, when herbalism was still mostly underground, a place where plants actually thrived quite well. I love hearing people tell their herbal stories of how they began their herbal work, who and what inspired them, their favorite plant and healing stories, and I felt that others would be interested in hearing them as well. In fact, I felt it was important to capture these stories before this generation of elders passed on, as we're all destined to do. My welcome guest today is the beloved and well-known herbalist, Margie Flint. She is also a dear, close friend, and she was a student at my first apprentice program in New England when I moved to Vermont in the late 1980s. Margie has served as the beloved village herbalist to the seacoast town of Marblehead for over 40 years. At her home in Marblehead, she founded Earth Song Herbals, a busy herbal center where she taught classes, made herbal products, offered herbal consultations, and trained a generation or two of herbalists. She likes to say she's retired, but she's really almost as busy as ever. Margie continues to travel throughout Europe, Canada, and the U.S., offering courses on herbalism, facial diagnosis, and reading the body as a clinical diagnostic tool. She's a professional member of the American Herbalist Guild, a staff member of Pacific Rim College in British Columbia, and has taught at numerous universities, colleges, and hospitals. Her book, The Practicing Herbalist, a self-published labor of love, is considered by many to be the definitive guide to setting up and running an herbal practice. This 500-plus page book is a treasure trove of invaluable information that Margie has gained during her 40-plus years of herbal practice. I've often heard her say, "The plants and my clients are my most revered teachers." You can find out more about Margie's work at earthsongherbals.com. Welcome, Margie. It's so great to have you here.
This is so much fun. It's like I have the best job in the world. I get to hang out with my friends.
It is a pretty good job. I think that's probably why herbalists never really retire, right? You know, most of us who are in our 70s and even 80s now, we keep saying we're going to slow down, but we love what we do so much. And I see that in you for certain. So let's start with that simple, like that aha moment. You know, I know you've had many aha moments with the plants, but if there's a story or a memory you have of a time when, you know, a plant just called to you, it was like kind of a wake up call for you and, you know, claimed you really.
Well, the plant that has claimed me is, I don't like to say this around the other plants, but my favorite plant is yarrow. And yarrow is everywhere in my life. And I need it in my life. And she stands behind me and protects me like a big female warrior. And it's like, I feel invincible when I am with yarrow. And, you know, she's my companion and my protector and really oftentimes my savior. You know, those times you're out cutting things in your garden and it's like, whoops, I cut that right up that vein. That would have been successful. You know, staunching bleeding and, you know, every condition of blood. And I do have so much of it.
So when you talk about yarrow as being your savior, you don't mean just on an emotional or spiritual level. You mean actually on a physical level as well.
Yeah.
I love that you chose such a common plant. Like you said, it's everywhere around you.
Well, I learned that from you. Who was my first teacher? Rosemary Gladstar. So, yeah, I mean, you taught us, you know, 150 years ago that if we go outside and a plant is abundant around us, we're meant to consume that. And, you know, I love yarrow. She's just always with me.
Very, I agree. And so many incredible legends and stories about that plant. And it's a great one. So is there a defining moment when you actually, you know, knew you were an herbalist or called yourself an herbalist? I know for so many people it's so tentative. Like, when do I'm an herbalist?
Well, I'm not sure I would have called myself an herbalist, but I was called to the herbs. And that was in, what was it called? The Gaia Herb Symposium, when it was at the 4-H camp in Massachusetts.
And
it was that first one where I met you and so many wonderful herbalists at that one gathering, you and David Winston. So my first teachers. And it was only 65 people, I think, which included the chefs and the teachers and the students. And when I was there, you walked in on the land and looked around, and I felt like I was transported in time back to some ancient gathering. It was like, oh, these are my people. And then when it was time to go, I just sat in a circle while everyone was singing and sobbed because I didn't want to leave. Wow. It's like this is where I belong.
Yeah, I know just what you mean. You know, it seems to be a recurring theme among our generation of herbalists, really, that we found family, community, tribe, you know, almost instantly. It wasn't like something that we had to work through. You know, it was like, oh, I'm back home. Where do you think that came from?
I actually do believe it's ancient. I think we're meant to be connected to nature. And so much of the modern world is detached too much from it. And that feeling of having your feet on the earth and looking into the eyes of people that you look at them and think, this is my sister, this is my brother. And that feeling, it's like, oh, it's the functional family, not the dysfunctional family. we chose to gather together.
Oh yeah, that's a good window. You know, one of the things I think is such a great model that you've created and was just brilliant was, well, you created like this brilliant path of learning for yourself where you'd meet with a teacher, and if you really wanted to study with them, you would invite them to your center, and then, you know, you study with them for years,
I would
actually.
I would make them come to me. I remember poor David. David Winston used to drive all the way from New Jersey, driving, you know. And he would drive, get here. And I'd have five people around the table to learn. And the kids, I had little kids then running around. And he would teach, I wouldn't have to pay, and he'd get paid by those four, you know, five students. You know, we could not do that today with him, could we?
So it not only served you, this method of learning, you know, bringing the teachers to you, it really served your community
and
as
my
well.
Children.
And your children.
Oh, I feel very strongly about that now that so many years, I mean, my babies are in their 40s now. And but the impact of having you and David and all the other amazing teachers that have come and got, I mean, it was normal. Gabriel said, Mom, I never realized that your friends were all these incredibly famous herbalists, and they helped raise me. And it's true. I mean, David Winston would sit around. We can't say these things now, but he would talk about remaking yourself, the path to becoming human. Those stories and the kids sitting in this group of amazing, brilliant students, all listening to the life of a story and drumming and, you know, what a wonderful way to be raised. And I think that taps back into what we were originally talking about. there's something about the ancientness of herbal connection. And the kids were raised in that, and it made them very stable.
Yeah, they are very beautiful, well-adjusted, creative children, adults, really. You know, I just have to ask you this because you said you couldn't talk about it and you couldn't mention it. And I think it's important to just mention what those things are that we're not supposed to talk about or mention anymore. You know, we're elders. We can say anything we want.
Yeah. Okay. You know? Well, it's interesting. Right. I'm doing a keynote for the Maine Fungi Fest. And I'm
wonderful. I'm going to be there.
Oh, cool. I didn't know that. Oh, pardon me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I'm going to touch on. I keep thinking, oh, I'm going to do the Mother of the Universe talk. It's like, all right, children, it's time to get along. Be nice to each other. Use kind words. All this calling out stuff is inappropriate behavior. And I mean, one reason I love the Great Lakes Herb Fair is that everybody is so nice, just the way it was back at Gaia all those years ago at that first conference. Everybody was just there loving the plants. It was the plants that brought us together. And nobody cared if you were tall, short, thin, fat, green, blue, whatever. You know, love is all there is. John Lennon.
Yeah, so is there a teacher? I know there is, but I'd love for you to talk about the teacher that most influenced your work and maybe helped you become the herbalist that you are today.
Well, I, of course, William LeSaussier is who I've written the book based on his knowledge. But really, Rosemary, you get first credit. You were my first teacher. Yeah, you and David, you were my first teachers. And the early... I find that everyone, the first teachers they have the biggest impact. And you knew William, and David knew William, and Matthew Wood knew William. And, you know, I would say that's my, I have to count Tate Gilday and Mindy Green. I could go on forever. So, but William LeSaussier was, in my opinion, the premier herbalist of the 20th century, as far as creating a Western herbal medicine diagnostic, you know, reading the face, nails, and tongue, that was really based on the beautiful melting pot of this country. You know, because he did Huna, South American stuff, First Nation stuff, Chinese medicine, Ayurveda, everything. And he made it into this wonderful, magical presentation that it just works for me. I mean, when he taught me the diagnostic stuff, it was like a funnel came over my head. And all, you know, as he's talking away, this information is going in. It's like, what a miracle. It's staying. You know, that does not always happen.
You know, I always have thought, it's so interesting to hear you say that, Margie, because I've always thought that, you know, that's really the best gift that a teacher can give is unlocking the key of your own ancestral knowledge, you know, and just allowing that information either to arise from you or be poured in, you know, it just, and that, I've heard you mention that before, that, you know, that was one of the ways that he just kind of downloaded that information into you. Yeah, and you've done, I want to say that you've just done this brilliant job of keeping his work alive and, you know, very fluid in these times after he passed away so tragically, was so much younger. And I didn't get to interview him.
No. Well, I do have, you want to know a secret?
Yes. Everybody else is going to know it too. So. I know.
His children have asked me to... publish his writings.
So exciting
and
to
I
hear.
Said yeah. Yes, immediately.
Yeah. So why do you think, I mean, I know that we all look at William as being this brilliant messenger, you know, of both past and present information. So what do you think it was about him that was able
well,
to to chat about?
Yeah, I think like, you know how the Renaissance had all these brilliant people that had innovative ideas and everything was so alive and new and fresh. And I think William was a vortex and sucked in all this energy and information and channeling Pythagoras and all this stuff. You know, he was a man of extremes in all ways. You know, I feel, well, I won't go there, but I knew him later in his life.
But he wasn't the wild young man. That's when I knew him really well.
It's like, you know, but he received information and was able to transmute it in a way that solidified into concepts that he shared. And he was really brilliant, you know, and today he would have been thrown under the bus for bad behavior. No.
He wouldn't have mind, actually, you know, it wouldn't have mattered to him. You know, one of the things that, along with the system of facial diagnostic and reading the body, he also really brought that whole triangular system of formulation.
Yeah, the triangular system. Yep.
You know, so many herbalists, myself included, have adapted and, you know, changed and shifted. But his original design of that was amazingly brilliant.
Yes.
Do you want to share? Do you mind sharing what about that?
That is not my absolute specialty. So I'm going to save that for David Winston. But I will say about William, he really encouraged his students to take his information and then create their own. Like, David teaches the triune system with a little David Winston twist on it. You know, that's great. You know, I don't want my students to be little cookie cutter me's. And you said that to me way in the beginning of my career. I said, I don't know how I can't go out and dance naked in the forest at 6, teach all day, and then do a nighttime class and then sing under the stars. I don't have that kind of energy. And you said, oh, honey, you don't have to be like me. You can be your own person. Remember, I used to fall asleep at 3 o'clock in every class of yours.
Well, it could have been because I was boring. So.
No, it wasn't because you were boring. It was like, okay, filled to the max, must pass out.
You know, I wanted to just talk a little bit about your beautiful center that you've created. And it continues to be just such a wonderful heart center. You know, many herbalists and the herb teachers, when they're coming through, they always love to stop at your place.
Oh, now it's a center for fun. It's not really a center for classes anymore, other than, you know, a couple of reading the body classes in the garden. But yeah, it's so close to Logan Airport. And I have this massive home I have to rationalize owning in my singleness. And so, you know, like, the international's coming up. So I'm going to have, you know, Jim McDonald, Matthew Wood, Mindy Green, Anna Fernandez, Jane Holly Stevens, and Asheville, Mark Williams. I don't know.
Mark Williams. Yes.
So, yeah. And there'll probably be more. And I have room for them.
It's very generous, you know.
No, it's not generous, Rosemary. It's selfish.
It's selfish. There's another way of looking at it. But, you know, I'm curious, like, in the busiest days of your programs, you know, you were making products, you were seeing clients, you were teaching classes there, and it all happened in your home. So how was that for you? I know you mentioned earlier it was wonderful for the children, but I'm just curious, like, having such a busy public life in your home, if you don't mind sharing a little of how that was for you.
I'm an extrovert. I love people. You know, COVID was the tortures of hell. So, you know, I like having people in my house. And then when they're gone, I'm glad they're gone because I get to have my quiet. But, you know, I am a people person. I love people. I love sharing my space and my food and my drink and my garden and jazz. And I, you know, I I love entertaining. It could be because of my parents, you know. They made us entertain their business associates, you know, when they would have these lovely, you know, after meeting dinner parties, and we would have to serve hors d'oeuvres and have polite conversation that was intelligent. Yeah. So, you know.
Good practice. That was really good practice. Yeah. I know exactly what you mean. I'm the same way. And I think also because almost all of the herbalists, I'd say all of them that I know, are such brilliant, intelligent, heartful people. So it's good company.
Yeah.
Really good company. Yeah. You know, I wanted to ask you about, you know, your teaching at the universities and hospitals and colleges. You know, at the time especially, it was a unique experience to be invited, and yet you received an invitation to teach at Tufts Medical University, which was quite prestigious.
That's a good story. So I had just literally the day before completed my guild application, professional membership thing. And why do you want to join the guild? And I wrote, to bridge the gap between herbal and Western medicine.
Okay.
And the next day the phone rang and Astrid Pujari, who's now one of the top holistic doctors in Seattle, asked me if I would come and do a lecture at lunchtime to the students. And I said, yes. And she said, are you sure they're going to be eating? I said, I don't care. So I went in and lectured, and the four people who were most opposed to integrative or herbal medicine said, oh, we want her back here. You think she could do a pre-selective course? And I taught there for 6 years.
Oh, wow. That's really incredible. So how was that experience for you? And, you know, like actually teaching at the, you know, because
good.
You're...
It was really good. It was a devotion, you know. They should have paid me way more, but... I realized a number of things. One, I realized that doctors go into medicine for the right reason, or the ones I met. They go in to help people and heal people. And then, you know, med school beats it out of them. My friend, one of my students was Michael Greger. He wrote How Not to Die.
Oh.
And he said, I said, why, you know, I'd ask him, why did you take this course? And they'd say, he wrote, I came to retrieve my soul.
Oh. Yeah, that's...
And so many of those students were there because they had a grandparent who always talked about herbal remedies, but they didn't save the information. And they missed that. You know, I miss my grandmother, or I wish I'd paid attention to those recipes. So they were coming, you know, to tap into some ancient familial something. I mean, it was a rich experience.
Yeah, for them and for you.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really incredible. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, one of your specialties as a practitioner and a teacher, you know, and you're brilliant at teaching it, has been your emphasis on facial diagnosis and using, you know, learning to read the body as a diagnostic tool.
Yeah, so that's all William Lesacier. And, you know, David taught me some of his things too, and Will Morris also. Yeah, he taught me all that ear stuff. That is what really stuck with, you know, this part of the cartilage here is the spine.
Wow.
Yeah. And if you pinch on it and then look at the tongue and see if there are little wiggles in the same areas and then touch the spine, they all match up. You've got three.
So you found this to be an incredible diagnostic skill. Oh, you know, it's not taught in the medical schools or anything. I don't think there are any teachers really who are.
But it used to be.
I know it used to be, but I mean, currently, and yeah. Yet, do you have any examples of how reading the body has really helped as a diagnostic tool, you know, like in your practice? I mean, I'm sure you have a million, but do you have one or two that you could just share with us?
Sure. Well, I'll start by telling you my biggest mistake, because, you know, you learn by your mistakes. So I had a man come to me, and he was in very acute pain in his back. right behind his shoulders. And he's like, I'm in so much pain. And he had had surgery recently. And I kept asking him questions, but I missed the most obvious thing, which was that he was absolutely white. He had no blood. And it turned out that he was bleeding from the surgery, and the blood was filling up his pericardium. And I missed it because it was just in the beginning of my learning. And, you know, nowadays, if he walked through the door, I would have seen it right away. But that's why we call us practicing herbalists.
That's right.
We have to learn. You know, sometimes the biggest thing you learn is by the biggest mistake you make. I mean, he lived. He was fine. They went in and repaired the damage, the unsuccessful surgery. But that, I'll never forget that.
You know, I also remember a time that's really incredible. And also that openness to share when we don't get it quite right. You know, I also agree with you. There's so much learning in that. You know, we used to have at some of the early herb conferences, we used to have a class actually on our mistakes, you know, like
what a great herbalist idea.
It was really great.
We'd have it again.
Yeah, because there was so much learning in that. I recall a story that you had told me, or maybe Pat herself, of when William was at your... Do you want to share? Do you mind sharing that story?
Yeah, so William Lasasse was teaching, and I have that on videotape. It's a horrible recording, but there he is. And he's going around the room as we're all in groups looking at each other and reading, and he had taught us that the large intestine line comes down, and then if it forks, it's a little more serious. And then if a fork rises up one side, then the next, and then it joins together and makes a little puffy island, that's pathology. And he very nonchalantly looked at that, described the thing, said it's a pathology. And she went back to her doctor, and she had just been to the doctor and complained about lethargy and, you know, pain, maybe, I don't even remember, but definitely lethargy. And he just said, oh, you're in menopause. It's like, that is not the, that's, yeah. So she insisted he do more diagnostic work, and it turned out she had colon cancer. Because this little island that you get when it can be cancer, but there's some blockage for sure going on. It may not be cancerous, but you could have a tumor, or you could have a prolapse. It could be any number of other things. Another organ could be pressing on it, whatever, but find out what's going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she said that it saved her life. You know, she had it was fairly advanced when she went back that second time, but she said it was being at your class with William that really saved her life, because she would not have gone back.
It was William this.
Yeah. Yeah. And then she went on to, Pat went on to do a lot of, you know, education about that as well. You know, it's a very well-known herbalist. Yeah. So you're also an accomplished artist, you know, and I know many of us are proud owners of your lithographs. They're really stunning works. And your art has been featured in galleries throughout New England. So can you share how art has also shaped your life and your herbal work?
Yeah. So I began doing etchings back in 1974. And interestingly, that was the same year I started my herbal pen. So art and herbs have always overlapped. And the theme of my art is primarily nature and pretty happy. You know, when I was born, it was, my mom said, oh, Putnam, this is like living in a fairy tale. And really, no matter what's happened in my life, I do have a sort of rose-colored glass overall attitude. I can get depressed, but, you know, overall life is fabulous. And the career of art, I really feel like I continued that is just I did my artistic work on people. You know, it's like, we'll smear them with a little bit of hawthorn. And, you know, it's like it's all energetically the same.
Okay, awesome.
Yeah, it's like art and color heal. Music, vibration, right? So why do I love jazz? You know, why do I have these concerts all the time? Because if I don't hear live music once a week, I'm not as happy.
And
because that is that beautiful. Vibration heals.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Talking about jazz and music, you know, that's one of the more recent healing gifts that you're offering to your community is hosting these, you know, in-house concerts out in your beautiful garden where 12 people...
12 years.
Yeah, you've done it for 12 years and you have these really well-known jazz musicians and musicians. And you have... I've never been able to make it yet, but I will. But you have like, what, 30 or 40 people that come and sit in your backyard? Yeah,
I can fit up to 50 people, COVID safe, no less. And I have permanent furniture. You don't have to bring anything but food and drink and a good attitude. And you have to listen. I don't like chit-chat in my music. You know, it's like, listen.
It's also very nice for the musicians, you know, to have that respectful listening. Yeah, it's a really beautiful offering that you've created. Yeah, so I know that you have many stories, but is there a particular story that you can tell when you saw plants, you know, work a miracle, like a healing miracle? I call it witnessing for the plants, you know, like one of those times when, you know, a plant just did something miraculous for somebody or yourself.
I'll just tell my own story, I think, this time, just because it's been so dramatic lately. So I had drama the past 2 years. Big story. I'm not going to tell that whole story here, but essentially my heart, it started with lightning. When I was a little girl, I was struck by lightning and indirectly, but nonetheless, the charge came through me. And that electrical jolt affected my heart. But I didn't even remember that story because it was so normal for our family to be struck by lightning. And so lightning. So we have electricity. It did something to my heart. And then when I look back over my medical history, you know, I've had like 6 unexplained cardiac events where, you know, I'd be totally normal. And then I would lose, I don't know, 4 seconds, 6 seconds where I shorted out and I'd be on the ground without any memory or, and, you know, people would be walking along with me. It's like, where is she?
Wow. Yeah. It can be scary.
Yeah. And then 2 years ago, I just went into big AFib and they couldn't regulate it for 8 hours and it was scary and I nearly died. And so hawthorn is the story. Hawthorn has, people have been telling, my herbal friends, the herbs have been telling me. I have 2 hawthorn trees that I planted. How many people plant 2 hawthorn trees when they're up here? It's like, there must have been a met. Oh, and right next to it, a linden.
So, oh, beautiful. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Everything you need.
Yeah. I mean, this huge cedar falls over and the little baby hawthorn catches it and saves it from taking out my brand new huge deck for the musicians. Hawthorn is always there protecting me. It's like, let me protect you. So this spring, now that I'm healed, I did actually have more electricity, but in the medical version, and they did a cardiac ablation. So it's burning rings, 4 rings of fire, more fire. And when I went out and had all my soil and compost delivered, there is a hawthorn tree growing in my front yard. I did not plant it there. And it is like 3 feet tall.
Oh, my God.
I know. It's like, oh, you'll protect me. Now I have hawthorn in front and in back.
Yeah.
This is a young plant. And you know, there are so many stories of the heart, like Jim McDonald. You know, when I went to Scotland to help him when he had his heart drama.
Do you mind sharing a little bit about that?
Oh, I love that story.
Yeah.
Thomas Easley calls, Jim McDonald's had a heart attack, and the voice says, you must go.
And he was in
Scotland, yeah. He had the heart attack in Ireland, went to Scotland, passed out walking into the hospital entry. And then they put him into an induced coma for 30 so odd days, in which time I had got my act together. And then I went over to Scotland to help. You know, first Thomas went, then Rosalie went, then I went, and then Stephen, his best friend, went. So, and we all were there when we could do the things we were best at.
That's perfect. Yes.
So what did I come with? I came with a little box of herbs, hawthorn and yarrow, of course, and rose. I didn't know he hated it.
And oh, goodness, yeah. You know,
I brought sprays because I'm in cardiac intensive care. So a spray of white sage, which is actually really good for conservation because it takes essentially hardly any sage at all. And a spray of sweet grass, and I blessed the whole room. You know, I just walked in and began praying. I arrived with my hands and my heart.
And your heart, yeah.
And in my hands, I sent all the prayers that came in every single night through Facebook. There were people praying for him all over the planet, and they would send me these beautiful messages. And I would just offer them to him when I went in the morning. And then I would massage him from head to foot going around. I couldn't do the back of the bed. And he's super long in weight. But every day I was there, I would massage him. And those muscles hadn't been used in 30 days. I wish I'd done more time on his feet. But it was the most... I didn't care how I looked, what I wore, anything. I would just come in as an empty vessel and channel all the prayers of the people. And then I would ask his doctor was a riot. I'd say, well, what's going on? Well, he has a clot, blah, blah, blah. Where is it? And then I would write on Facebook, focus on this part of the heart. Send yarrow. And then we go in the morning and the doctor say, I don't know what happened, but the clot is gone. And then the next day I'd ask him. And so it got to the point where he was like, okay, today, let's focus on this. You know, and that first day when I sprayed the room, I always say we because I never felt alone. I turned around and the doorway, all of the intensive care nurses were standing there like this. I was so surprised they were all there. And they said, what did you just do? The energy in the entire ward just changed. And I said, I'm happy to teach.
So, Mark, you know, one thing that this story really illustrates, and for those who are listening and don't know, Jim McDonald is a very beloved herbalist in our community who had a massive heart event when he was teaching and traveling. A number of them. Margie and several members that she mentioned of our community and others went over just to care for Jim because he, you know, he just really needed that love and support and care. And the entire, I would say, in the United States, there were really literally hundreds, if not more, of herbalists and people who knew Jim who pulled together resources and money and time to, you know, help he and his family. And he's doing remarkably well. He recovered from a heart attack that they didn't think he would recover from, but he came back teaching.
Well, he's back teaching. Yeah, so I'll tell that too. But, you know, Stephanie, the last event he had, the doctor said, well, we'll unplug him from everything and clean him up a little and bring the kids in. And she said, what? He said, yeah, you know, we're not going to do the surgery. And she goes, you said he had a 4% chance of living. Yeah. She said, do the surgery. He will live. And I was like, yes, Stephanie.
Oh, awesome. Oh, good. That's such a great miracle. Well, one of the things that I know that both for yourself in your own personal experience and then also with so many of your clients that you worked with, you know, you incorporated allopathic medicine with herbal medicine. And so often you hear, you know, oh, you can't do that, or, you know, they're two entirely different systems, which they are. But do you mind sharing a little of your philosophy and how you work with both?
I mean, I wouldn't be alive without allopathic medicine. You know, I would have died when I was 2 of dehydration, you know, back in the old days. So they would just chuck me into the forest. I had my appendix out. I would not have lived with, you know, my appendix ruptured on the table. So there's 2, well, lightning, but that, no intervention there, not until later. And that cardiac ablation saved my life. I mean, really. So I'm here. I'm reborn. appendix, you know, so I've had lots of surgeries and, you know, Western medicine is really good at certain things like diagnostic tests. I can't do a colonoscopy, you know. I mean, some people may be able to psychically read things, but, you know, Western medicine is really good at some testing, and then some of it is crap. But, you know, it's a big world, and the more doctors you actually work with, where you respect them and they respect you, that's where we have integration.
Yes, that's so wise, yes.
And you know, I don't want to do everything myself, and I don't know everything. So, you know, if I don't know the answer to something, I want to send people out to somebody who does.
It's very wise, yeah. I know, it seems so odd to me that people have to think of these systems as not being integrated or able to work together. You know, it's a little bit like politics these days. I have to share with you, though, before we go on, there's a big thunder and lightning storm, Marky. Yeah, brewing right as we're speaking. There's big thunder happening. So if for any reason we get cut off, it's because of the lightning and thunder. And I have to laugh because you were just talking about how...
It's the Flint. I'm surprised it isn't here. Lightning comes to us.
Yeah. Well, you know, you've mentioned several plants that, you know, it sounds like you really rely on as your plant allies. But yarrow, you've mentioned hawthorn. Do you want to just talk a little bit about that plant ally relationship? And also if you have any other plants that you would share?
What I've noticed in my own life is I have this huge herb closet full of plants. I mean, that goes, it's 12 feet wide, gallon jars of herbs in it. How many plants do I use all the time, regularly? Red clover, raspberry, yarrow, calendula. I love slippery elm, but I make people grow the tree. Marshmallow, leaf and root, because I like both parts of the plant. Nettles, of course. I mean, you know, there are certain dandelion, of course, burdock, of course. But the, you know, when I moved onto this property, there was nothing here. It was hard pack, and it was just burdock, yellow dock, burdock, and mugwort, those three herbs, that was it. I rototilled, the dust blew away. There was not a single worm.
Amazing.
On the property.
You have like a jungle there. It's like a just an incredible jungle of plants. That's remarkable.
Yeah, people say, oh, you're such a good gardener. It's like, no, I'm not. I am not a gardener. Those are survivors. You know, I give them seaweed and compost and fish heads, but, you know, they survive on their own tenacity.
Yeah. So I know you've made so many different products. You know, I've used a lot of your products. I'm just wondering, is there like a favorite remedy that you have? Like,
yeah. Well, ride and glide. You know, my
That's gonna, kind of famous.
My last husband was such a great namer of products. We're still friends. And he named that one Ride and Glide, you know, lovely sexual lubricant, lower lip balm. And he actually gave me names for all new products, which I haven't had time to make on with men's names. And they're super clever. So Ride and Glide, I formulated that when I had a bunch of clients. That happens, doesn't it? Where all of a sudden you have 10 people with the same thing. So they all had cervical dysplasia. So Ride and Glide was really, you know, just something you could put into your vagina that would be nourishing. So very high in wheat germ oil, vitamin E, fish oil, evening primrose oil, and then herbal oils of black cohosh and calendula and wild yam and comfrey, because a lot of it seemed at the same time women would have irritation on the vaginal wall. So it was painful to have intercourse. And, you know, when you have cancer signs, you know, men are afraid to stick their little penis in there. It's like there are psychological elements as well. And then I have essential oil of rose and then for non-cancerous issues, more fun things like sandalwood or patchouli or rose geranium if you want more estrogens, or lavender. You know, you can only use things that are healthy internally, but, you know, sandalwood makes you want to rub it more. So that's fun. And it's just a great lubricant. You cannot use it with condoms.
And why is that?
I mean,
you'll just wear it out and it will have a hole in it.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, it does break down then.
Yeah.
The surface.
Well, you've been telling some really incredible stories about herbs and your life. But I'm just want to ask you if you have any, just a favorite story. Like if you were sitting around the campfire and telling a favorite herbal story, do you have one that you would share with us? It could be about anything, by the way.
I think yarrow is, I would have to tell my yarrow story. So I had, you know, I live in a fishing town. So I thought, well, I'll use the fishing net on the, you know, the wall of the open parts of the deck and tie it to trees stuff and have the clematis climb up the fishing line. Well, it was really ugly. It did not look good at all. And so I thought, oh, I'm cutting that down. So I took my brand new jackknife and went outside, beautiful day, sunny, and I'm just cutting, you know, the clematis is growing around, so you have to cut, pull it out from the little curly cue, cut, cut, cut. And I got to the end and I was really tired and I cut and sliced.
Oh, yeah. Ouch.
And there's a little scar here and it goes right along the tendon instead of right into the vein.
Oh.
And I looked at it and I thought, tendons do look just like Solomon seal root. And then I called for Gabriel and said, run in and get the yarrow. And he came out with yarrow tincture. I was a little unstable because it was really bleeding. And I just stayed where I was. He ran in, got the yarrow. I put it on, put a couple squirts in my mouth, and it stopped bleeding immediately. I washed it out with yarrow, perfectly good antiseptic. And then I used butterfly Band-Aids to, and it's like the scar goes from there to there.
That's amazing. It's amazing how many stories we all have about yarrow, this very common herb, you know, found everywhere in the temperate regions of the world. And it's been such an ally, really, for like thousands of years.
Yeah.
That's great. And that's really one of its main uses. I mean, it has so many main uses. That's the other thing that's pretty astounding about it.
Well, I think about yarrow, you know, they used it to, they would grind it up the leaves and flowers and fling it into their wounds at battles. And I, part of, well, I mean, we were pioneers back in the day. You know, when I was teaching at Tufts, there was an herbal renaissance going on. You know, St. John's wort was on the cover of the New York Times.
On 60 Minutes. It was on 60 Minutes. Yeah. They did a whole program on it. Yeah.
It wasn't New York Times. It was a magazine. I don't remember what it was. But anyway, I feel like we were warriors. So yarrow gives us the strength to go into battle to make change, because we did make change in our time, and I'm still making change, and so are you.
Yeah.
We're vitally alive because we're full of herbs.
That's a very interesting picture. I love that. It's so amazing, too. Like, as you're speaking, this enormous thunder is coming rolling in. So I think we're going to be done soon. But I had a couple other questions I did want to just ask you. And one is, when you were beginning your herbal work, you know, over 40 years ago, just starting your practice, et cetera, what particular challenges did you feel that you as a young herbalist had to face?
Well, as a young mom and an herbalist, and, you know, I went through a lot of husbands. So I was essentially, even when I was married, I was single. You know, that was the real truth. And I think being a little on the fringe was challenging for my children more than for me.
Oh, okay.
Because I wasn't normal.
They appreciate that now, right?
I do now, yeah. Now it's fine. Well, I don't know. They might think I'm a little... I think now they think I'm a little too wild. But I told them, well, I'm not a parent anymore. I can do whatever I want.
There you go.
So that was a challenge. It was sort of the fitting into society part. But really, I think the most important thing that I followed was listening to the encouraging words to move ahead. And thank you. Because, you know, when did my book begin?
Oh, and
when you asked me to come and teach. You said, oh, I want you to teach for the advanced program. And could you bring a little something to hand out to people? I don't know, maybe 42 pages. And that was the beginning of the book.
Yeah, I still have that copy. I still have that copy of The Practicing Herbalist. Yeah.
Thank you. But I think all of us, if we listen to the words of, you have to hear your path. If somebody says, could you teach at the library? That's a message rippling out saying, it's time for you to teach at the library. It's time for you to reach these people. Or I want you to come and teach at the school. And then equally to hear the no messages. No, I won't do that. Listening to the bell of truth is really important.
And that's great. Thank you. Yeah. So what do you think are some of the challenges facing herbalism today or herbalists today? You know, they're really entirely different than when we were starting. So
yeah.
what do you see as maybe some of what herbalists are having to face today that is unique or different?
My perspective is people are studying too much with too many people and not applying the knowledge.
Well, yeah. Okay.
It's like, yeah, take a course, but then apply it.
Do something with it, yeah.
Yeah, if you just keep reading books and never doing anything, you're not an herbalist.
That was a great answer. So, you know, and I wanted to ask you about your book, The Practicing Herbalist. I know it's considered really one of the best references for practicing herbalists and for anyone who wants to go into practice. It has so much information in it. I think it's now in its fifth printing.
No, fourth.
It's fourth printing. Okay. I know this has been a labor of love for you, and you've really poured your life teachings in this book. Can you just share a little bit about the book and the process for writing it?
Yeah. The purpose was I wish I'd had a course on business. I wish I had been able to set up, you know how to set up my office and know how to do accounting and know how this, that, and the other, how to run a business. And I had to teach myself how to do all that. Or, I had an accountant who taught me how to do it. And then another accountant who taught me how to do more. But I just thought, if I put it all in one place, what I've learned, not that I know everything, but at least I know how I did it, and I am successful, that would help everyone else. And then, of course, the diagnostic information is William's teaching, so that's super valuable. And then I did an intake, and my intake is very fluid. It changes all the time. But just examples, and it's fun because you get to have a question, and then I might tell a story, or I might say what the next five questions would be. And that part, I'm actually rewriting the whole thing and probably going to figure out some way to offer it to everyone, because the person who did the compilation put the wrong chapter in. I know. So whatever, bonus. So intake and vitamins and minerals and how to use sous vide. That's
truly a treasure trove of information. Yeah, really an incredible work. And they can get it from your website. They can go to your website and get it there. Yeah. I did want to ask you one other thing, Margie, because as a practicing herbalist who's run a very busy practice for many years in a country that's basically illegal to practice medicine, how did you balance that? Rebelling?
Rebelling.
You just did your work.
Yeah. I just did my work, and one of my favorite stories is when a man appeared with stage 4 cancer with his daughter, and, right away I asked, what is the purpose of your visit, blah, 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 what is your occupation? I'm a person, what is it called, personal liabilities lawyer, like the ones that, and I was like, oh, shit, if I ever get sued, it'll be this one. Nothing happened. And I just believe I'm on the right path. And the truth is, I'm an incredible optimist. And I always believe people have good intentions, even when I get screwed sometimes. I still believe in people no matter what happens, because
I think that's
good.
A great way, just you do what you're called to do, and you do it with the most integrity and the most love. It's like the gift we have to offer to the world. Yeah. So as an herbalist, what do you feel your greatest, you've done so much, but I'm just wondering what you personally feel like your greatest accomplishment has been in your herbal work. I'm sure your greatest accomplishments have been your 2 children, but in your herbal work.
In my herbal work, I'd say the book is my legacy. Even when I'm gone, I have a book executor who will keep it going. So I think tangibly, that is my greatest accomplishment. My second is being present to help Jim McDonald, because I think that was a miracle.
That's beautiful.
Thank you so much. I'm going to kiss you goodbye and say goodbye.